This episode of the A Dime Back podcast is brought to you by J. Timothy's Tavern in Plainville, Connecticut. I live there. I eat chicken. All right, hey everybody, welcome to the Dime Back podcast. I'm Tyler Wilkinson. We're joined today by Russ Steinberg.
Hello.
And Megan Bard.
Hello.
And our producer Alex Cohen is around too.
Hello, hello.
We have a very special guest today that we're super excited about because
very
we have
special.
Been a big fan of this guest for years now.
You already introduced me. I don't know.
Yeah. She is a two-time national champion. She was the American Athletic Conference Defensive Player of the Year in 2017, the fourth overall pick in the 2018 WNBA Draft. She is our best friend and I think current football writer. I'm not sure. We'll double check. Gabby Williams. Gabby, how you
Hello,
doing?
Hello, everyone. I'm good. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Of course. Thanks so much for joining us. First things first, where are you?
I'm not really sure. I'm in this little town called Vola, about 30 minutes from Naples in Italy.
And how's it going? How's life overseas at the moment?
Next question.
Yeah. So that, I wanted to get into this a little bit just because, you know, we've been following you on IG and Twitter and I mean, yeah. I don't know how else to say this. It just does not seem like the most glamorous existence for what you think of international basketball at the moment.
No, it's not. It's not glamorous. And I mean, I'm in a nicer area. Well, I don't know. I'm in Italy, you know, which sounds a lot better than like Turkey or Russia,
sounds
you know?
Better than Russia in January.
Right, exactly. So I try not to complain. But it's not just overall. As far as like the basketball and the way things are ran, it's not ideal. It's not glamorous.
Well, so this is like an area that, you know, we hear about a lot, especially with WNBA players. First of all, just to start, when is the last time you had a break from playing basketball?
Oh God.
Like, have you had a month off?
No. Maybe when I tore my ACL 6 years ago.
Right, because I mean, that's crazy. I mean, the schedule, especially that WNBA players that go overseas have to keep these days, just seems absolutely insane to me. And it's amazing that you guys stay as healthy as you do, frankly. I mean, is that, do you have to take certain precautions to keep it that way?
You do, and it's tough because, I mean, I've been on three different teams in the last 2 years.
Right.
So it's tough because you sometimes you have to be selfish, you know, because you have to think like, okay, I have this ahead of me now. I have to think about this season. I have to think about this season. Like maybe I should just take, you know, this easy or I should check this out. Because at UConn, it's like, that's all you got. You just wrap it up, band-aid it, and you'll deal with it after season. But it's not like that here because you have to think about, like right now, I'm thinking about preserving my body for Chicago.
Right.
And so you always have to do what's best for yourself.
That is
so
tough
when do you head back to the States? So you're in Italy now. When when do you go back to the US?
Probably around April. Depends on playoffs and everything. And yeah.
And then you'll jump right into the WNBA season.
Preseason
right into training camp.
Oof.
Yeah. April. Training camp starts in April, I think, or May.
Just on like sort of a global scale, I mean, because we're so U.S. centric, I mean, we obviously view the WNBA as the primary place to play. But I know a lot of people are like, you go overseas to make your money, and then you come home to play ball in the States. Generally, I mean,
oh yeah.
Do we view it wrong? I mean, how do you sort of view which one of these is your priority, or is it just change based on the time of year?
I just don't think there's enough people like you who really look at the WNBA the way that you guys do. You know. If we had more fans, more people who idolized it more, maybe we wouldn't have to go overseas to make our money. But unfortunately, that's not the case. And the WNBA isn't at that level yet as far as, I mean, the talent's there, the competition's there. It's just, you know, the fans and everything aren't there. So that means the money's not there. So we have to come overseas.
That's tough, though, because, I mean, the NBA, who is essentially an equal partner of the WNBA, is overflowing with money at the moment. So, I mean,
yeah,
I don't know. It's not up to you to solve these problems, but I mean, does it take money to grow the game, or does it take growing the game to get the money? I guess this is the fundamental question I always ask about the league.
At the end of the day, I think it comes down to exposure. Because, I mean, there's so many people that, you know, you bring them to their first WNBA game, they're like, oh, you know, I actually enjoyed that. But they would never know because we're not marketed enough. We're not, you know, our merchandise isn't as available. There's not enough media outlets covering us, things like that. And people say, oh, well, that's because no one cares. But you're not giving it a chance for people to care about. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you expose it to people, people will pay attention. It comes right down to it. But there's just such a stigma around it and, you know, sexism.
Yeah.
No, it's true. Especially when you think about the fact that all of the media, like sports writers and all the people making those media decisions are guys. There's just not that many women who have a say in the matter. I mean, when 5% of the sports writers are women, it's not surprising that 5% of the sports coverage is for women's sports.
Exactly. Because, I mean, if you cover it more, then people would care about it. They would. Because, I mean, the media tells people what to care about.
Totally. And I think, the WNBA playoffs this year felt like they got more press. Oh, hello, cat. They got a lot more press. And I know a whole bunch of people who are like, oh, yeah, I watched my first, you know, WNBA game during the playoffs, and it was really awesome. And mm-hmm. the guests had, like, never bothered to tune in before, weren't aware when it was happening, didn't know which channel to find it on. Or my cat's so rude. She's like, feels the need for everything. The way they are.
But yeah, no, that's true. I mean, they make it so difficult to watch the games, you know, they just make it difficult, period, to be a fan. I don't want to say they, but it is difficult to be a WNBA fan. It is difficult to find out the schedules or just to watch a game on TV or to buy merchandise. Like, it's just way too difficult. Yeah. Like, if you want to get more fans, then you have to make it easier to be a fan. No one wants to work hard to be a fan.
So at some point, Megan talked to Sue Bird on this podcast, and her cause at the moment was that it was so hard to get access to WNBA stats, and that even the market was like the market for fantasy games or whatever was dragging because of it.
Yeah.
We did a lot too, because we love to do historic comps, and like you can't find even like UConn women's basketball stats that precede like 2003. They just don't. Mm-hmm. They're not anywhere. And like, we would love to do deep dive on like ludicrous, you know, Rebecca Lobo stats, but it's just not.
Yeah.
I mean, we're nerds, but that's, you know.
We want to find out how many people were better than Gabby.
Before she was born.
Exactly. You touched on something though, which I thought was interesting. Like, it was something I just wanted to ask you about, because you obviously were kind of like a athletic phenom, you know, before you became a well-known basketball player, I feel like, right? I mean, correct me if I'm wrong on this, but like, when did you sort of start realizing that the avenue of professional basketball was even available to you?
I mean, of course, coming out of high school, I was like, yeah, you know, I'm just gonna walk through UConn and then get right to the draft, you know? And then I kind of got a wake-up call of just how not good I was once I got to UConn and what I needed to do. So I would say probably around like end of my sophomore year, beginning of my junior year of college is when I really, you know, you always think of it and you always imagine it and it's always in your head. But I think that's when I really kind of made it tangible.
I guess stepping back further than that, though, like when you were, I don't know, running track in eighth grade, like how aware were you at that time of the WNBA? You know what I mean? Because it also feels like there's a fundamental problem of how do we get really talented young women athletes to start seeing that more when they're younger.
Well, I grew up about an hour and a half, 2 hours from Sacramento. So I would go to the Monarchs games sometimes, but I still didn't know any of the players, you know. It's not like now where you have a 12-year-old boy watching an NBA game who knows everything about every NBA player on the team, you know.
Right.
It was just like, oh, okay, this is a cool experience. And that's kind of how it was for everyone that was there, you know. There's not really like that diehard fandom. And I didn't really have that at a young age. I mean, I had people and players I looked up to for sure. But it wasn't, I don't know. It just wasn't prioritized, I guess.
So I will say, and I guess, you know, I don't want to criticize the WNBA, because it does seem like in my adult lifetime, the amount of awareness, especially for young people, like coming into the league, I feel like it's definitely growing. You know, it's I feel like a lot more young women are seeing it as an avenue, which can only help because the talent level, college basketball too, but especially in the WNBA, the talent level now is insane compared to what it was 15 years ago.
Oh my gosh. I mean, I don't know about 15 years ago. I don't want to.
Because you weren't born yet? Yeah, I get it. We get it, Gabby. You're young. We get it.
Well, no, I just want to say something and be like, well, what does she know? But I mean, it's just ridiculous. I mean, every day in practice, you're really fighting for your job. It doesn't matter who you are, what pick you were. Like the competition level and talent level, that's what I'm saying. It's like, that's all there. Like that is, that's the best basketball in the world by far. We can't have that one year round, you know, and just people just need to just really appreciate it because it is just kind of ridiculous. I mean, there's only 12 teams in 144 spots, so that right there tells you just how competitive it is.
You mentioned your sort of tough transition going from star high school to freshman at UConn. What's been the hardest thing to adjust to going from UConn to the league?
I mean, kind of a, well, one, you know, like I said, you gotta, you're fighting for your job now, you know, no one cares about what's going on in your life or whatever. I mean, it's, if you're caught sleeping for too long, then you're out, you know, you're done. That's it. They're going to find someone to replace you real quick. But, you know, it's also been hard is like, I just miss the UConn system and how things are ran. I remember when I got to Chicago, one of the assistants pulled me aside and he was just like, I can like kind of see on your face, you know, things aren't quite run here like they run, like they were run at UConn, which was different. And I know UConn's just a, you know, one in its own. And I'll never have like a coach like that again or a program like that again. So that was kind of a tough transition. And I mean, Steph was just like, I would do things and she'd be like, it's not UConn. Everything you learned at UConn, just forget it for a second. And that was kind of the best advice she gave me to kind of help me get through my rookie year.
I always kind of wonder for like a freshman coming in to play at UConn, like you see it on TV, you kind of have it like an idea of what it's like to go to that program. But like, the first time you suit up, you go out to Gamble, you're playing in front of 10,000 people. Like, what's that experience like for 18-year-old Gabby Williams?
I mean, playing in Gamble, that wasn't even the scary part for me.
No?
At that point, no, not at all. At that point, yeah, I was just kind of excited and ready. Yeah, that wasn't too intimidating. That was just exciting. The scary part was, you know, stepping into Gamble for my first individual.
That first practice.
Yeah, that was, the practices are the scary parts. So then once you finally get into the games, put the jerseys on, it's just kind of like, you get to take a deep breath and just enjoy it for that 2 hours.
That's funny though. Now that I'm like putting all the things you're saying into one place, I mean, that's kind of a luxury at UConn that can't possibly exist at the professional level when you need to play 12 months a year, you know, like, and you're playing a lot more games than the 40 at UConn. I mean,
yeah, definitely.
Is that a hard adjustment going from so much emphasis on practice to, you know, whatever that equals at the professional level?
It was, because at the professional level, it's more kind of, it relies on you, you know.
Yeah.
You don't have someone pushing you in practice like the way that we did at UConn. You know, if you want to get better individually, it's mostly you have to do it on your own. You have to get a coach to pull you aside or whatever. The practices just aren't as hard as far as like physically. And like they won't push you as much just because we were playing like 4 or 5 games a week in the WNBA. We were playing, especially this year, the season being so short, we were just playing so many games a week. A lot of our practices were just like walkthroughs and recovery because we just couldn't move.
Right.
Unlike UConn, where we're practicing for three and a half hours a day, like as hard as you can go. And then the games are just kind of like, I don't want to say a day off, but it was easier. It was a lot easier than practice. for sure.
Do you ever call CD and just like be like, yell at me for a minute? I just need some nostalgia.
No, but her voice is still in the back of my head a lot. Like, for sure.
I thought that was so funny that Sue Bird said that. She's older than I am. She graduated the year before me, and I'm already pretty old. So, and the fact that, like, CD is still in her head all these years later, I think that's just a riot.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. I mean, if I jump on a pump fake, I can just hear her yelling, stay down, like, things like that. Even, like, off the court, too, because everyone knows CD was kind of strict with how we presented ourselves, which was great, and I wish more coaches did that. But I'd be like, ooh, this is, but CD would not approve of this outfit. Or like, CD would not. Like, things like that.
God. I think it's interesting that you guys, that at UConn, they do the Twitter ban. How does, like, the team, do you guys like having the Twitter ban during the season, or was it, like, you kind of, like, chafe at that a little bit?
No, I think we like it. And I mean, they've asked us about it before too. And I don't think we really had much of a choice, but we always had an idea to keep it anyways. I think the players like it. I liked it. I thought it was good for the team, especially, I mean, at first it's hard. When you come in, you're just like, okay, you know, you do it because you're going to do whatever they tell you to. But you start to appreciate it once you see kind of other players on Twitter.
Yeah.
Or you start seeing people get in trouble, and then you start to appreciate it and understand why we have it.
Is it tough though to not interact with somebody on Twitter who might be criticizing you? Because I know it's not like you don't check Twitter during the season, because
we see
the favorites. We know you're on there. So is it hard to control yourself when somebody is getting on you on Twitter?
Not for me. That's what the blog button's for. I'm very notorious for, I have like maybe 200 or 300 people blocked on Twitter and Instagram alone.
That explains why our tweets are going unretweeted.
But it's that simple. I mean, it's something for me, it's not as difficult. It's just like, okay, well, you don't need to be saying my things, then. It doesn't really get under your skin, but it's just crazy how, like, you can get a million and one, like, you're my favorite player, I love you, and da da da. And then you get one, like, your jump shot sucks. And then you start and go look at their page and everything, and you're like, wait, what am I doing? But it's crazy that, and I mean, everyone in the league will tell you that. It's always one comment that kind of makes you look at them a little bit. But for me, it's not hard to kind of ignore those trolls.
Don't worry. While you were answering that, I did check to make sure you didn't have me blocked, and you don't. So thank you.
How many of those trolls are people challenging you to games of one-on-one?
Oh my gosh.
Why is it such a thing? I don't understand this. Every women's basketball player we ever talk to, that's like their biggest complaint about social media. Guys
could beat you.
Yeah.
Because you never hear someone say that to a guy either.
No.
Has anyone ever noticed? Like no one's going up to like LeBron or I don't know, just any college, NBA, whatever basketball player, men's basketball player, and going, oh, I bet I could beat you one on one.
I'm gonna tweet it at Tor Watts right now.
Like, ugh, I don't know why. It's just so annoying. It's just like, get a new line, I think, too, at this point.
Especially when most of the people challenging someone to one-on-one probably get winded putting their socks on.
Right. Just like, and you never know how to respond, too. You're just like,
I always feel like these are guys who've like never actually seen a women's basketball game in person. Cause like, if you've ever actually gone to a women's basketball game, you'd know, you'd get your ass kicked. Like, not real. It's not real.
Yeah. And I mean, people try to use it as like a part, you know, pickup line too. Ooh. And I'm like, what is attractive about that?
Right. So the pickup line is basically saying, I bet I'm better at your job than you are. And right. I don't get paid to do that.
Exactly.
Rough, try it.
Oh, I've been swooned. Yeah. Yeah, I don't get it. I don't get it, but I don't know.
So when you're, I guess, after your rookie year, I mean, how do you want to improve your game coming back for next year? I say back as if you've stopped playing.
Yeah, but
after your flight, how do you want to play differently?
Right. I think I want to be more just aggressive in general, just period, offensively and defensively. I felt like I played it kind of safe, you know, being my rookie year and still learning everything. I felt like I still worked as hard as I could, played as hard as I could, but I felt like I held back a little bit and didn't take as many risks as I should. So I think that's where I'm looking to improve. And I think overall that will improve everything else, you know, my rebounding, my percentages, all that good stuff. I think that will come just by me being a little bit more fearless.
I mean, not for nothing, that's my impression of your UConn career was pretty much that same trajectory, right? I mean, as you grew more comfortable and got more risk, I mean, the stat lines just ended up insane.
Yeah, once I stopped being a little baby about everything, once I finally sucked it up, because I mean, freshman, sophomore year, I was just like, they want me to do what? They think I'm like, you know, they push you so hard, you're just like, no way they actually expect me to do that. Like, that's hard. And then once you kind of suck it up and you're like, they're telling me to do this because they know I can do it. Then that's when you start getting the results.
I always found it really amusing that, you know, especially your junior, senior year, they didn't really play a sort of traditional position-based format. And mm-hmm. The time when Gina referred to you as a center and you were like, oh, am I? Am I the center?
I think I actually know exactly what interview you're talking about.
Some post-game interview.
Yeah. Because it was like, oh, I guess I am the center.
Because you take all the jobs and, you know, get most of the rebounds. Like, yeah.
You're like the center. Point guard on fast breaks. Center on defense.
Yeah, that's what he would call me. He'd call me our point center. Was what my position turned into midway through my junior year. But I remember we were like at USA one summer. It was like me, Lou, Azare, and Nafisa, and we all had to like line up by height. Mm-hmm. And out of the four of us, I was the smallest one and like pretty close to the short end of the whole USA camp. And they all walked past me and they're like, that's our center, everybody.
That's great.
But yes.
Well, I'll just say on behalf of us, we enjoyed the shit out of your 4 years at UConn.
Thank you.
I know I speak for all of us, but it was a lot of fun to watch you play because it seemed like every game you were going to do something that like, oh shit, I can't believe you did that. Like just looking like a wide receiver pulling passes out of the air. It was really awesome. Like, you know, you'd see the gift and, you know, 30 seconds later, and it's just like, and I'd watch it 10 times. Like, I still know how she did that. I still don't know.
Thank you so much. That feels good to hear.
Yeah. I did warn Gabby we swear on this podcast, just for the record.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't even know I swear. Like, I just like forget about it.
I didn't say she had to, but I said we would.
But yeah, but yeah, Gabby, in how we communicate with each other for the podcast and the blog and stuff on Slack, your name was typed out in caps a lot during games. Like, how did that?
Your name needs to be exclaimed more than spoken oftentimes.
I mean, that's what it sounds like coming from the, you know, Italian man. Gabby!
Oh, man. Any shit talk for Lou? She's a fan. She listens.
Well, today I was crying. So, you know, you get pretty bored overseas. So you start going through old photos and videos, and it's the 1 year anniversary of her black eye from the Texas game. And I swear I just sat in my room and just laughed for like 20 or 30 minutes. I'll probably post it on my
Do
Instagram.
It.
Sure.
I was heading to Google Images right now, so.
Don't worry, I have a nice video for you guys. I'll put it on my Instagram story. I was just crying laughing at that video of Lou. I was like, oh my gosh. She is literally the human punching bag.
She does end up on the bad end of a lot of violence.
A lot of violence. Oh my gosh. I'll be like, Lou, chill out. I'm not there. I can't fight for you no more. if something goes down. No, I'm just kidding. But she is. I mean, when you play the way she plays, I feel like that's the only way. Teams can really stop her is just to be that over physical with her. And as she's, you know, matured and kind of grown through, you call it better and better, but that poor girl.
Do you get to watch, do you get to watch the games still? I know they're probably on in the very early morning for you now.
Yeah, or super late. But I don't sleep anyways. I do watch them sometimes. This Italian Wi-Fi acts a little funny. So I'll literally text like our old video guy and be like, yo, send me the clips, send me the goods. But I still could try to keep up on them as much as possible.
What are your impressions?
They remind me a lot of the team we had my junior year. Where it was
after Stewie Moe and Tuck left?
Yeah, just because I can see that any five of those guys are kind of capable of having a game where one of them takes over kind of thing. And I felt like my junior year, that's kind of... By my senior year, we kind of had our core guys that we knew who needed to produce and everything. And but my junior year, it was just like, all right, one of us has to go off tonight or we're losing.
Right.
Like, you just have to have at least one or two guys just have a crazy game because you're so young. And but I mean, they've got great leaders. They've got Lou and Fee, who've been through it all. So, yeah.
What's it like watching Crystal go from freshman to, like, all-world junior right now?
Mm-hmm. I know. It's so weird. It's so weird that she's a junior.
It's crazy. Like,
oh, my. I know. It's crazy.
I think we're old.
Well, I mean, it's great because I watched her kind of, you know, I watched her, my little guy grow. So, I know it's been interesting, but she, and seeing her be more vocal now too. I mean, I'm not there, but I can see it on the court, which is, you know, that wasn't, she was always, she just had, you know, upperclassmen before.
Right.
So it's interesting seeing, you know, her dynamic and how she plans to take ownership of the team.
How long do you think Gino coaches for?
I'm not going to answer what? That.
You're supposed to say forever so that we don't go into a meltdown.
Forever.
Thank you.
Forever's my answer. Cool. He'll never stop coaching. No, because if I say anything, it's going to turn into like a rumor. Like inside,
it's 100% true.
Says,
would you be willing to take that coaching job after he retires?
What do I look like? No way. Oh my gosh. Prayers up for whoever's brave enough to take that position. I'm not going to be the one. Mm. I don't know who's going to be prayers up for whoever. Not that they can't do it, but
I can't.
Who wants to follow that? Yeah. Who wants
I can't to imagine. That? No.
Shay Ralph.
Yeah. Maybe.
Okay. How's your cat doing?
Oh, my poor baby. I miss her so much.
She's in Chicago?
She's in Reno with my mother.
Okay.
And, you know, we get the FaceTimes in. I get to talk to her. But she was supposed to come to Italy with me, but had some problems with her shots and everything and wasn't allowed to fly for like 20 days.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah, so she had to stay in Reno, and I cried.
Megan can send you one of her cats.
I mean, I do have, there's a couple of cats and a dog wandering around this house right now.
Oh,
no, I am that person.
She's got extras.
Yeah, but my mom will FaceTime me, and I know my mom, she's just quite the personality. Something to everyone's lives, so my mom's, I know, excited that I wasn't able to take her. My mom's loving having her at the house.
Oh.
Better get her back.
I know. Don't get too comfortable.
I love that you named your cat Halle Berry. That's like the best cat name I've ever heard. I really do. I love that.
Thank you so much. I always forget sometimes that there is an actual Halle Berry now.
Same.
Same. Like my cat is the Halle Berry, you know.
I mean.
All right. Well, Gabby, we'll let you go, but thank you so much for taking the time. Best of luck in Italy, and hopefully get home soon, get home healthy, and have a awesome second year in the league.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me. This was fun.
We'll be rooting for you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. Oh, are we done? Like, do we need?
I guess Tyler left.
Yeah, I could do the thanks for joining the Dimebag podcast.
Megan, you do it.
And everyone, thanks for joining us on the Dimebag podcast. Tyler left early, so you have to hear me. Everyone, enjoy Gabby. Bye. All right.